TARAE at TwinCountyRecoveryServices.org. And we thank you all so much for listening and look forward to.
This is the Boy Scouts of America. You are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA. ACRA.
Perfect. ACRA. Thank you.
Hello, listeners. My name is Rachel Ann Schulman from the Camper Hudson Radio Group. Camper Hudson Radio Program led by Life Interview. Noble guests in the local swing countries are from the local organization and ask them what they do in their communities, what shaped their life of growing up where they are now. We also occasionally talk about sport news and other subjects and interests, such as the upcoming community events and culture happening in the area. Tune in on the fourth Sunday of every month at 3:30 in the afternoon on 90.7 FM. Past interviews are available at waveform.org. Thanks for listening and supporting the radio for open ears at 90.7 FM WGXC. Thank you.
Here's a PSA from Columbia County Sanctuary Movement about what to do if you encounter ICE. In our community, knowledge is power, so let's talk about your rights. You don't have to open the door, and you have the right to stay silent, not sign anything, and in New York, you can record an interaction with law enforcement. If an agent comes with a warrant, it must be signed by a judge to be valid. In public, make sure to stay calm, don't run, and never lie or show false documents. If you're detained, you don't have to sign anything without a lawyer. ICE can use your words against you. So stay silent and ask for legal help. To stay informed, visit our social media account at CCSMNY. And if you are interested in learning more about your rights, call Columbia County Sanctuary Movement at 518-303-3848, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5 p.m. And if you're approached by ICE agents or see them in the community, call CCSM's Rapid Response Line at 518-291-9386.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, October 3rd. Local early morning temperatures range from 35 degrees in Steventown to 49 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 58 degrees. Air quality today will be good. Pollen levels will be low. Today will be sunny with a high of 72 at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 48 degrees. Then tomorrow, after a cloudy morning, it makes it up to 80 degrees at 4 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 53. Then Sunday, we see a high of 82 at 4 p.m. Monday makes it up to 79. Things will still be dry and sunny. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 6:59 a.m., high tide at 12:41 p.m., and then low tide once again at 7:07 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 70 degrees, and the tide strength is average. Sunset today will be at 6:22 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:50 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 15%. Plasma winds will be fast at 756 kilometers per second, with a thin density of less than 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently being impacted on all frequencies with an S6 level noise floor. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 161. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
The Public News Service Friday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. Today marks day 3 of the government shutdown. NBC News reports the Senate will vote this afternoon on the Democratic and Republican short-term spending bills, which have failed to advance several times. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, said if the measures are blocked again, the Senate will adjourn until Monday, extending the government shutdown into a sixth day. NBC notes the majority of Trump supporters back tax subsidies for Affordable Care Act plans, a new poll conducted in the days before the shutdown has found. An extension of Obamacare subsidies, which expire at the year's end, is a key sticking point for Democrats in the fight. Meantime, the government shutdown is getting attention, but farmers in South Dakota also wonder where things stand with agriculture programs now that the farm bill has expired.
Without new action, some critical programs will continue, but others are paused. Michael Happ of the Midwest-based Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy says Congress should know farmers are operating under a much different model than 2018, the last time a farm bill passed.
Input costs are through the roof. Corn prices in particular are way down. And then, yeah, we have the uncertainty from the tariffs.
Economists say tariffs were felt during President Donald Trump's first term, but now global customers like China are buying commodities from other nations. I'm Mike Moen.
And federal tax credits for electric vehicles and clean vehicle standards ended yesterday. Advocates say the end of the policies will put the U.S. at a disadvantage.
President Donald Trump signed his budget reconciliation bill in July, ending federal EV tax credits and fuel economy standards. EV sales represent 12% of cars sold in 2024, according to the Maryland Department of Transportation. The end of the tax credits may also pump the brakes on the state's plan to have all model year 2035 vehicles sold in the state be electric. Ingrid Malmgren with Plug-in America says there's been a concerted effort to ensure vehicles in the U.S. are run on gasoline or diesel.
There's been a lot of money spent in the 2024 election cycle by oil and gas interests, and this appears to be the administration and congressional leadership's way of paying back for all of those donations and funding.
Republican lawmakers and Trump have railed against EV tax credits. They argue the market should determine what vehicle consumers drive, rather than government incentives to prop up the industry. I'm Simone Perez.
Next to the Keystone State, where Philadelphia and Allentown are among the toughest U.S. cities for people with asthma, Anna Santos Rushman of Villanova University says Allentown ranked first last year, while Philadelphia's situation is worsening.
There's the urban part of things, so you're seeing, you know, relatively large cities being listed. Pollution is another of the big factors here, asthma.
By the way, Pittsburgh is faring better at 44th and Harrisburg at 15th. According to the latest Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America report, more than 28 million Americans have asthma. This is Public News Service. As the contested case hearing for the Enbridge Line 5 relocation project wraps up today in Madison, supporters of the project are urging people to remember what's at stake for rural Wisconsin.
Environmental groups and the Bad River Tribe are challenging permits the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources issued to Enbridge in November for rerouting the pipeline. After weeks of testimony, final statements are expected today. Nate Zimdars with Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation emphasizes what's at stake for farmers who depend on propane, a byproduct from Line 5.
Oftentimes, our farmers are forgotten about in conversations like this. Just think about the food that's getting put on your table. It's got to come from somewhere. It comes from our farmers who are working really hard during this time of year and are dependent on that energy.
He emphasizes farmers are already experiencing the strains of the federal government shutdown and difficult economic conditions. Opponents of the pipeline are just as determined, saying rerouting Line 5 would be detrimental to the environment, increasing water contamination and threatening cultural resources. I'm Judith Ruiz Branch reporting.
And the number of women behind bars in New Mexico and across the globe has increased by nearly 60% in the past 25 years, according to a new Prison Policy Initiative report.
New Mexico ranks 17th among the states, with women ages 29 to 49 making up 9% of the confined population. Wanda Bertram with the initiative says many states are doubling down on prosecuting low-level offenses that women are vulnerable to when going through hard times.
Offenses that are associated with homelessness, right, like sleeping on the street, panhandling, trespassing. Offenses that are correlated with poverty, like petty theft, drug offenses.
Among U.S. states, South Dakota had the most women incarcerated, followed by Montana and Idaho. I'm Roz Brown.
Finally, an environmental group is voicing concerns about the safety of drinking water in Tennessee. According to the EPA monitoring data, 14 water systems in the state show PFAS levels that exceed federal limits.
Dan Firth with the Sierra Club Tennessee chapter says the EPA issued a drinking water standard for what are often called forever chemicals, and it was expected that the water treatment plants would need to remove them. But under the Trump administration, Firth says the EPA is now delaying or scrapping those rules.
In regards to the reason why we still have them is because the EPA is not letting the rules go into force that would require the treatment of that water to bring it down to regulatory acceptable limits.
EPA data shows more than 172 million people have been exposed to these forever chemicals this year. Danielle Smith reporting.
This is Mike Clifford. Thanks for ending your week with Public News Service. Remember, and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to the WGXC Afternoon Show. I'm Lucy, your host. I'm all set up in the window of the WGXC Catskill Studio at 393 Main Street in Catskill. If you're around, pop over and give us a wave. We're right here in the window. And today I have a special, special guest that you don't usually see in the studio. First of all, my speaking guest is Adam Saunders, the founder of Ulster County Canines. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And as I mentioned, my special guest is Rella, who, Adam, tell us a little bit about Rella here.
Rella is, first and foremost, my dog, as they say in the industry, my heart dog. She is also the mascot for UCC, the animal rescue that I run. She comes with me quite a bit as an ambassador to the public. She's always on her best behavior, just chilling in the studio right now.
Yeah, literally just having a little nap. So welcome, Adam. And we're going to talk about, as you mentioned, Ulster County Canines, the nonprofit that you run and co-founded with your partner, Jamie Steck. So it's located in Saugerties, appointment only.
Correct. I mean, UCC offers a variety of services, but they are typically by appointment only, whether it be the adoption or the clinic or boarding or, you know, et cetera. But we are located in Saugerties, what was once primarily a boarding facility under the previous owners. We purchased it in 2018 and have been running it as a rescue ever since.
And people can find, if they wanted more information, it's ulstercountycanines.com. Ulster, I mean, I think most people know how to spell it, but Ulster County Canines.com. So there's a ton of information there. When I was doing my research before you showed up today, you offer so many different things that I feel like you don't see at a normal adoption center. So it's hard to figure out, a place to start. I mean, first of all, you started your own nonprofit, which is already hard.
That was quite difficult, yes.
it's rescuing animals, which is incredibly emotionally difficult. But you told me there was a reason for that. And I feel like your email said that there was a reason for that. You can tell through your website. And that was the system. So your passion comes from seeing a system. Your partner in you and your partner have over 30 years combined experience in this sphere with taking care of dogs. And so why don't you go a little bit into the system as somebody who's behind the scenes? I've adopted animals, never a dog, but I've adopted animals before, and it wasn't always the best process. So why don't you go a little bit into what the system is for, I guess from the point of view of the dog, what is that like? And what was it that made you so passionate about starting your own venture to do it differently?
I mean, that's a bit of a loaded question, but I mean, yes, I've been in this sphere, as you put it, in animal rescue. In the industry, we refer to it as rescue with a capital R. I've been involved in it for 26 years now. Starting initially as, a volunteer and working my way up through various positions in two facilities, really, UCC that I founded, and then my previous job that I was at for 20 years. But I saw all phases of rescue throughout those 20 years, obviously intimately familiar with that facility that I worked in, but traveling up and down the coast, as far south as Louisiana, as far west as Texas, all the way up to Maine, just being exposed to different facilities, different philosophies and how they are run. There's a vast amount of regional differences in how they approach animal welfare. Some regions have no approach to animal welfare whatsoever. a public awareness for animal welfare. Again, that tends to be a regional difference. The public support for animal welfare, since nonprofits, animal rescues are quite frequently donor supported. That's nonprofits for you. But there are also state funded rescues. Some states, it's statewide. Delaware, for instance, runs off of a state funded system. Here in New York, every town is required to have a municipal facility for strays, but that's the extent of what the state requires.
Wait, so sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. Wait, so every town has a facility for that? Even here?
Every town is required to have a dog control program. Now, some of those towns, rather than maintaining a facility, will contract with a neighboring town that has a facility.
Okay. Where's the closest one here?
Or they will use, for instance, in the city of Kingston, the SPCA, they hold the strays and do stray response for a number of nearby towns surrounding Kingston. Catskill, you just asked, they have a town funded officer. That's a very good question as to where their strays go. I don't know the answer to that.
If anyone knows, let us know.
Ulster County Canines, we cover the town of Ulster, which is a small hamlet just north of Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
But our facility is in Saugerty. So while I'll do the road response down there, the dogs come up to our facility. And that's the way it works. Every town is mandated in New York to have a program for strays.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
But they don't all go to the expense of maintaining their own mm-hmm. facility. Some of them will subcontract that out to a nearby town that already has a facility.
Interesting.
But to answer your original question, what's it look like from the dog's perspective or the cat's perspective, or really any species that we as humans have tended to take into our homes, all of those species enter rescue.
Mm-hmm.
All of those species end up having some sort of need, some sort of intervention on the rescue's part at some point. And you will find rescues. Well, we are primarily dedicated to dogs. I mean, there's a rescue in Saugerties dedicated to reptiles.
Mm-hmm.
There are numerous bird
rescues. And
farm animals, horses, specifically horses, broader terms, farm animals in general. Yeah, because every species that we interact with, we tend to fail.
Yeah.
And they're
that's an interesting point of view. It is for everything that we love, we can also let it down.
Yes, and then there is a rescue or multiple rescues that do their best to step in and pick up that slack. Why did we feel the system was failing? Again, that's a loaded question. There were specific things I saw failing locally, but there's very much a national problem too. And I mean, UCC is not positioned to solve the national issue.
Yeah, of course.
We're trying to position ourselves to contribute to solving the local problem.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was the structure that you mentioned, that we offer services, centralized services in our facility that may be more than what a typical adoption facility offers. Like, mm-hmm. we have our adoptions, but we want to make sure that once the animal leaves, we're doing everything we can to keep them in the homes.
Yeah, I think that's the fascinating part. My husband and I adopted cats, and just, you know, specifically, we found out very shortly after getting them home that they were really sick, and we weren't told this, and we needed help afterwards, not even necessarily sure. financially, but it was giving these cats that were terrified of us medication that they needed and things like that. And we were pretty much ghosted. You know, it was like, well, they're yours now. Yeah, and we're not animal experts. I can keep this cat happy and healthy, but, you know. Yeah, so I thought that was really fascinating that that's something that you offer. That's incredible. Because like you said, you found them a home. Now keep them in the home.
Keep them in the home. And some adopters run into an experience similar to yours that, and the fact that the cat you adopted may have been sick, without more detail, I wouldn't jump to criticizing the rescue you brought them from. There are a lot of illnesses that are just really endemic to a shelter system.
Yeah, of course. It was something, again, it just needed a course of medicine.
Yeah.
But it was difficult that it was like, we have to hunt these cats twice a day in our home that they've never been in, from people that they've never seen, and stuff medicine down their throat. It was really hard. So yeah, assistance would have helped. We handled it, but...
Yeah, but you were flying blind post-adoption.
Yes, yes.
And that's one of the facets of it all that we've tried to help mitigate, at least for the animals that were adopted from us. We do have our clinic there twice a week. I mean, it's limited availability because this is not the veterinarian's full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
But she is dedicated to the cause. I have worked with her at one facility or another for virtually my entire career. So she makes herself available for UCC. We make that time available for the public. And absolutely, if there is, you know, an adoption and you need a little pointers on how to administer that medication, or even easier access to that medication without the, you know, the high exam fees that a regular veterinarian is going to cost or something to that effect. Because the last thing we would want to see is a cat return for what is actually a relatively simple
a round of medication. But people freaking out, children freaking out.
I mean, cats are sharp on five ends. You have to there are techniques to do all of that.
So tell us more about the facility, because you also have boarding facilities. How many rescues can you have at a time in your care?
I mean, I tend to tell people when they ask me that question that we have space for 30 in the rescue. That's all variable.
Mm-hmm.
Again, depending on what else may be happening. You know, we recently stepped in for a rescue of 22 cats. So
20 from the same place?
It was an individual that died, and the cats were found in his home after he had passed away. But we don't normally take cats. Nobody else in the area had any space because they had also been inundated with recent large-scale cat rescues. So we stepped in, but you know, they're occupying a space that 2 weeks ago would have been used to occupy or occupied by dogs. So that limits my that limits my dog space availability. You know, so the short answer to your question is space for 30. How many are there really depends on what else is going on that week. It's always fluid. Portions of the facility are, you know, hard structure built into the wall, your standard kennels, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Other portions of the facility we keep very fluid. What, you know, we got to throw something up for this particular dog or this particular species this week. That's what we're going to do. And next week it'll go back to housing dogs. we just find it has to be that way so that we can be nimble.
Yeah. Yeah.
In our response.
Help everything that can be helped. So tell us a little bit about where do most of the dogs come from? How does that, because you were mentioning the animal control or the dog control situation. Is that where, I mean, there are rescues, obviously, like you said, if an owner passes away or someone has to surrender an animal. But do they also, you know, if there's, I guess, when is a dog considered a stray? So somebody loses, they find a dog on the street. You come and pick it up. How long before it can be adopted? How long do you look for its owner, I guess?
So state regulations require a minimum of 3 days, typically a maximum of 7 days that a dog is held on a stray hold.
Mm-hmm.
Every municipality, they tend to pick somewhere in between those two numbers.
How do they get the word out?
These days social media is key to everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every dog control facility or responder has their own social media page. Town of Ulster Dog Control, Ulster County Canines, you know, we'll feature found strays on our own social media. There's also, I mean, a godsend of a website that was created, I believe, about 10 years ago, called Lost Pets of the Hudson Valley.
Hmm.
And this has become a central hub where if you found a pet, dog, cat, birds, I see birds listed on there. If you're an organization that does this, a dog control organization, you can post the animals that come to you. If you've lost your pet, you post on there that I'm missing my dog.
My
7-year-old tan and white pit bull wandered out of the gate that wasn't latched properly. And then ideally, if somebody picked her up, they would go to that website. And it creates a way for there to be a direct contact between the finder and the owner, which can bypass animal control altogether. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad. As an animal control officer, I feel like it's safer for all involved if the animals come to us first, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, the direct contact between a finder and an owner, just because those interactions do not always go well. What if you've picked up a dog that's a little thin, looks to be malnourished or mistreated?
Oh, okay. I get where you're going. Yeah, you wouldn't want to give the dog back.
Right. And the dog control officers or the humane law officers are able to intercede mm-hmm. in those situations, are able to create, verify that the home is in fact good, that these people can have their animals back, or create legal barriers to them reclaiming if there is a neglect situation occurring. But they have the authority to step in, whereas somebody showing up on your front lawn because you posted that you found this dog or this cat does come with a certain amount of risk.
Yeah. I guess there would also be no way to prove it either.
There's that too.
Yeah. You could just there's be like, too. Sure, that's my dog.
There is that too. I mean, I
ask for photos,
ask
I
for
guess.
Photos, yeah. Medical records. There are ways to make the best guess.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that's all we can really do too, yeah. unless there's a microchip. You're doing your best to verify ownership, and most of the time you're right. I've had a couple weird situations where one twin stole the other twin's
dog.
Oh
my gosh.
And of course the ID wouldn't tell me this, you
yeah.
know, things that had to be untangled after the fact.
Oh
but,
my goodness.
There's
always something.
There's always something. I mean, it's usually straightforward. But back to your original question, anywhere from 3 to 7 days, depending on the municipality's specific rules, they're held as strays. They're posted on social media. They're whether it be the internal page or a website like Lost Pets of the Hudson Valley. And if they are reclaimed, they are returned. If they're not reclaimed, they would typically go up for adoption.
So, all right. So the 7 days is up. Nobody has claimed the dog. Now, what's the process? So is there some sort of, how do they go from no longer being a stray to available for adoption? That if they're in your care, we'll just go with yours specifically.
That again would vary from organization to organization. New York State has recently put out a new set of regulations that we all have to abide by, at least as of December of this year, that will bring everything a little more consistent, mm-hmm. I guess. But at the moment, typically, before they go up for adoption, they're looked at by a veterinarian. You mm-hmm. want to make sure they're healthy, they're not contagious. There are certain vaccines that they are required to have by state law, rabies in particular, obviously. So they have to get vaccinated. Most rescue organizations will also facilitate spay or neuter if they're not altered, because we don't want to put them out into the world, mm-hmm. potentially being willing to make more
stray dogs.
Overpopulation is obviously something we're trying to avoid. So spay, neuter, vaccination, clean bill of health from the veterinarian. But you also want, at least the responsible organizations are going to do a behavior evaluation, hopefully an accurate behavior evaluation. Because if you're in front of me as the adopter, I know you've got kids at home and two cats just from this conversation. I want to make sure that the dog that you're interested in is going to be safe. Not only the dog safe from, say, your family, but, of course, vice versa. What if this is a dog that has a high prey drive and isn't going to be good with cats?
Yeah.
What if this is a dog that has or had rough experience with children in the past and is apprehensive of them? Of course, I don't want your children to get hurt. Not only is that bad for them, but that's bad for the dog. So, responsibly, we put them through a series of behavior, we'll call it tests. I don't do it quite in that structured a way. It's more of a observation over interactions over the period of time that they're with me, mm-hmm. where I organically place them into the situations, controlled situations, and I can observe their behavior and their response. We have our own dogs at UCC. We have our own cats at UCC. Children, that's a little different. I can't use...
Put a child in there as bait. How's this going to go?
So, you make your best guess on the dog's overall
temperament. Yeah, I think you can kind of tell most, even people, whether they'll be good around your kids.
But, there's other things. Food, resource guarding. Is this a dog that protects mm-hmm. their food dish? And if they do, that's an automatic no for kids, because kids aren't necessarily going to know to respect that.
Yeah.
And at least for my purposes, I'm also trying to figure out if the dog does have behavior quirks, are they quirks that are correctable, manageable, or this is just the way it is and you need to find a home that can deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some extreme cases, this is not a dog that's safe to put out into the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. I was going to say that too, because, once they have their clean bill of health and, things can be kind of are black and white usually in that situation. Emotionally, because you don't know, especially if it's a stray, you don't know where it came from.
Right.
So how much of that is temporary? How much of it is they just need some time? That's a lot.
I mean, a dog's behavior profile may evolve over the time that they're with an organization, because the first week that they're there, they may be scared, intimidated, mm-hmm. their reactions may be based on that. A kennel environment has a lot more stimulation than a typical home environment, mm-hmm. and the dog may be reacting to that overstimulation,
mm-hmm.
So that dog's behavior may be different in a home. We tried to create a hybrid between a kennel and a foster home type of situation. The dogs here anyway at UCC, they're not locked in a kennel and they only see humans for the 4 hours a day or whatever, that the staff might be there or the staff might be rotating dogs. They're exposed to us constantly as we go about the course of our normal day.
Mm-hmm.
They are exposed to a lot of the sights and the sounds and the things that you might be exposed to in a normal home environment, cooking, cleaning, different genres of music, because Jamie and I definitely prefer different genres of music. Whatever it happens to be. And she and I, with our background in animal behavior, are just constantly observing and making mental notes. This dog reacted this way, this dog reacted that way, just in the course of everything. And as I said, that behavior profile may evolve as we go. Our initial impressions after 1 week, 2 weeks after that could be completely different.
Yeah.
And you have to make the best educated guess that you can when it comes to placing them based on what you've seen.
Yeah.
But it is vitally important that the people making those educated behavior guesses are, in fact, educated.
Yes. Yes, so. that would be a huge... So how many... You said the people at your facility. How many employees are there, or helpers or volunteers? What does that look like? Or is it just the two of you handling this pack of dogs?
It's the two of us, and we have our erstwhile maintenance man, Matt, who is actually on these airwaves for his music career from time to time.
Oh.
But really, it's just us. How is that accomplished? 7 days a week.
Yes. That would be a lot.
This is the furthest away.
Yeah, you can't be like, home. Bye, guys. Nope. That's also why I like a cat. Here's your food. See you tomorrow.
No. I mean, the population varies, and if we need a break, we'll set up a time frame where there are fewer dogs there. We do have competent friends that can step in and manage a minimal population if that kind of thing is on the horizon for us. But really, no. I mean, we've been there for 8 years, and I don't think she and I together have taken any sort of trips.
Wow.
We have each occasionally had a day or two off on our own, but that's about it. It's just the reality we chose, that we built for ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, that's passion like no other. Let's talk about that a little bit though. Cause you know, we had a little bit of conversation before we went live, not much. But you were saying that you moved here to be an artist, right, and then found dogs. So let's talk about that. Like I said, I want to reiterate how much passion and drive has to go into doing what you're doing, literally 7 days a week. I'm a very passionate person, and there's nothing I do 7 days a week. So tell us about that. What was there anything specific that happened, or what was it that drove you to that point?
So, I mean, we both have a passion for dogs, but we also both have a passion for not having a boss.
So, that helps. That helps.
and that might be the primary driver in continuing to do this 7 days a week, 8 years later. But no,
But it's a lot emotionally, too. It's not just physical work. I mean, I don't know if I'd be strong enough to see this constant stream of dogs that need rescuing. I mean, that in and of itself would wear anybody down.
Yes. There is definitely...
I can't handle those commercials.
There's definitely a fatigue, but, you know, for... at least for me, probably 8 to 10 years into this, I had to train myself to focus on the positive stories.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to feeling overwhelmed by the negatives.
Yeah.
I had to learn to recognize my own limits, or the limits of the facility I was mm-hmm. working at the time, and realize that, you know, I'm not going to save them all. So let me be happy and proud of the ones that I can save. So, you know, at this point in my life, knowing that there are entire regions of this country that are just overwhelming with suffering animals, I don't want to say I don't lose sleep over it, because that's not accurate,
mm-hmm.
but I no longer have what would be termed compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still there. I have my little window, my little island to do this, and I am satisfied with what I can do in that island at this point.
Yeah.
I used to try to do a lot more, and it sounds like I still do a lot, and I do. But I'm not overwhelmed by what's past my own borders anymore, because I can't be. It's just we get up every day, we do what we can. But your original question, how did I land in this field? Yeah, I moved up here as a 18, 19, 20 year old kid. I don't recall quite what age, but to be an artist. Mm-hmm. All growing up, I was headed in that direction. Woodstock seemed like the place to be. It seemed very supportive of the arts, so I initially moved up here for that. And I was, in fact, working as a studio assistant to a relatively famous artist. He's in art history books, at least, named Al Held. I was working as one of his assistants in his studio. He had us on a 4-10-hour day work schedule, and I wandered into the local SPCA to volunteer with my 3-day weekends, and that was it. It was dog rescue from there.
That's incredible.
So, I mean, it's not to say that I had never met a dog before wandering into the SPCA. I have, you know, the dog we rescued, for instance, when I was a kid from the local Humane Society would really be what sparked it, but it was more of a, I don't know, it was a seed beneath the surface that really only grew out of the ground when I wandered into the local SPCA.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like as kids, we know things, but we don't really know them. I know where this dog came from, but I never really thought about it. And now I'm here. And yeah. Was that a good experience then, or when you were volunteering?
Yes.
Yeah. So that was a good experience. And then that just sent you off down that passionate trajectory.
Yes. I mean, it was a positive experience. I saw myself making some inroads with the behavior problem dogs they had way back then, purely on instinct.
So you had a knack for that, for connecting with them.
Purely on instinct. I had no education at that point. They had dogs. I don't want to say they didn't know what to do with, because that's not true. There were professionals on hand at the time. But they had dogs that were lingering, that were not going anywhere for mm-hmm. one behavior problem or another. And I certainly wasn't rehabilitating them. I wouldn't have known enough to do that back then. But what I was doing was improving their lives for a little bit while I was there.
Yeah.
You know, a dog that was not necessarily getting handled because of their aggressive tendencies or something like that, I was able to handle. Typically, I was able to get them out, good round of fetch, sit on the floor, give them a good belly rub, get them to relax finally, which, you know, they didn't typically do if they were that stressed due to the environment they were in.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I believe for the director or the shelter manager at the time, seeing that these dogs did have a positive capability,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that might have opened some doors for them for adoption that might have been discounted prior.
Yeah, I'm sure that also kind of points out the importance of volunteering anyway.
Sure.
Because, yeah, as you continue to mention, they did know what they were doing. They were trying to do their best. It was a positive environment. But sometimes situations like that, they're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So having you come in there and have the ability to kind of put a crack in there, that's an incredible thing.
And I mean, that was it. I eventually went from the volunteer to payroll, you know, doing the kennels, which was a little less direct hands-on with the dogs and a lot more cleaning poop, but
another reality of dogs,
but that's fine. It all has to be done. It's all part mm-hmm. of the process that gets them from stray or whatever they are up to an adoptable dog and hopefully in a home. And the career went on from there. I, you know, eventually was managing the kennels, eventually was managing the shelter, spent a good part of that time as the local animal cop. You know, then that brings us to Jamie and I opening UCC and exiting that other organization. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. I guess the animal cop part I'm a little fascinated by. I guess it's not nearly as dramatic or cartoony, I guess. When I think of a dog catcher, it's like Lady and the Tramp, right?
Well, there are two different things.
Okay. I mean, educate us, please.
The lady in the trap dog catcher isn't really a thing anymore.
I mean, that's literally... Okay, yeah. I want to also point out that growing up around here, we didn't see things like that. So yeah. It's dog catcher, crossing guard, and ice cream man. I did not think were real things. They were just on television.
Yeah, I the dog catcher these days is referred to as a dog control officer,
which
an
is
animal
much
control
better.
Officer.
There's no stick with the thing on the end.
There is.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, it's there. It's there in our vehicles if we need it. I mean, those are a safety mechanism if you're dealing with a highly aggressive dog.
Yes.
They are not the thing that you have to break out for every dog you run into. It's just there.
Especially if they're just trying to eat meatballs with their friend.
Right. You know, typically your animal control officers these days are doing their best to round up the dogs humanely, kindly, gently, and professionally. But you mentioned the difference between the dog catcher and the animal cop. They are, in fact, two different things. New York State law has... a set of laws that your dog catcher enforces and a separate set of laws that your animal cop, your humane law officer is the official term, enforces. One pertains to, you know, vaccinations, loose dogs, dangerous dogs, that's your dog catcher. And the other pertains to neglect and abuse.
Okay.
So I did spend almost 20 years as the humane law officer, investigating and prosecuting the neglect and abuse. But that you're only, the only organizations that the state empowers to field those officers is SPCA.
Mm-hmm.
So you typically have one of them per county, if that. So when I left the SPCA in Kingston, I was no longer a humane officer. Mm-hmm. I did remain a dog control officer. I cover three towns. So I guess I'm still a dog catcher.
Leave those poor dogs alone. They're just trying to have fun.
But, yeah.
Wait, so let's go back to the humane officer. So in that situation, that would be people, they get a complaint or they're tipped off or, you know, that there's neglect. Is that how that happens?
Yeah.
And you have to go investigate and...
It functions fairly similar to a normal police department, mm-hmm. only the complaints that we would investigate are you know, limited to that bandwidth.
Yeah.
If you get a complaint, animals being neglected here or there, or whatever the nature of the complaint is, you would look into the veracity of the complaint. Sometimes, at least during my tenure... Look, I mean, there's a difference between passive neglect and intentional abuse. And
yeah,
oftentimes passive neglect is due to economic issues or lack of knowledge. It's not necessarily...
I feel like sometimes people get in over their head, too. They want to help animals and take them in, and then it's 100, and...
And in some cases, there's, you know, mental issues. Mm-hmm. Hoarding, for instance, was, you know, actually a diagnosed mental disorder at this point.
Which is devastating. Again, that the emotional side of all of this is... That's...
So, you know, as an animal cop, you have the ability to... arrest somebody and remove animals by force if you need to. My typical approach when it was unintentional neglect was to provide solutions.
Yeah.
When I could. Provide education when I could. Provide resources when I could. Be they, you know, look, I'm sorry you just lost your job and I understand that's why you're not treating Fido's ear mite infection this week, but I have a clinic in my facility. Let me help you.
Yeah.
As opposed to arresting you and taking your dog.
Yeah, because what does that do? That doesn't fix the situation.
You know, you can usually tell if you're looking at a long-term situation where the animal is, in fact, better removed, because even if you treat the ear mites this week, the whole picture suggests that this dog is probably suffering from more of an environmental neglect as mm-hmm. opposed to a bad 2 weeks on the part of the owner.
Yeah.
But all of those are judgment calls that you make in the moment. And sometimes it is a lot more or sometimes it was a lot more, you got to go in there with a search warrant and you got to clear the house and you're dealing with some bad things, intentional and active abuse. But, you never know what you're getting into day to day.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we have a couple minutes left, so I want to switch gears now. Let's go up.
Sure.
Tell me about Rella. Where did Rella come from? I'm assuming Rella was a rescue.
Yes. So.
And how did she end up as yours? So why was Rella the special one?
Well, look at her.
Well, yeah, of course.
So, Rella, you asked, and I never quite answered the sources for some of our dogs yet. We have a lot of them come in as strays or private surrenders, people that, for whatever reason, are no longer able to care for their dogs. We also have occasionally or do occasionally take, we found during COVID, this phenomena of dog transports kind of ballooned. So, in southern states, there's a high volume of dogs because they don't spay and neuter, but there's a very low volume of adopters because everybody can go to Farmer Joe down the street and get a dog for free, and they don't care about spay and neuter or vaccination. So dogs end up in the shelter system down there and are typically euthanized en masse because there's no other outlet for them. So over the past 15 years, but particularly during COVID, this industry of transporting southern dogs up here, because we found quite the opposite up here, given that everything is spayed and neutered, and adoption is the primary avenue that people go to for family pets these days, as opposed to breeders or pet stores or whatever. So there was a demand for adoptable dogs up here, but there wasn't a supply. And there was a supply down there, but there was no demand. So somebody realized, we can drive them up here.
Yeah.
And that became sort of a cottage industry over the last 5 years. I just saw it balloon during COVID. I did it myself. I bought an old short bus and converted it for dogs. And, I was driving down to Tennessee in my very own chariot of the dogs.
How far is that?
That was an 18-hour drive.
With a bus full of dogs?
On the way back, yeah. It was empty on the way down, but except for Rella. She went with me. But, anyway, Rella
I like
was.
I like to think of Rella as this little guide to the new dogs.
There you go. She's a.
She's like, welcome.
Cerberus. We called my bus Cerber Bus. But she came up on a transport.
She's giving me side eye, by the way.
She came up on a transport. I did not drive her up myself. She came up on a separate transport. There was no intention to keep her. She was one of the dogs on the transport. I am to understand that from Jamie, my partner, that Jamie was trying to get her placed with somebody in the family very, very quickly, because she knew she was special. I didn't really meet her until 3 or 4 days in from her stay. But Jamie was trying to get her placed within the family because she knew she was special. She was a good dog. And, then there was just a day I happened to meet her in the parking lot, and that was it. She wasn't
leaving.
Love
at first sight.
She was not leaving at that point, and she really hasn't left my side since.
Like,
she doesn't need a leash. She just follows me around. She helps me when it comes to the other dogs in the rescue. If I'm trying to determine their dog-to-dog compatibility, she's always the first one I bring out.
You're the bait.
No, she's the ambassador.
You're the test subject.
But
she's like, get this one out of here.
she'll tell me what their initial reactions to dogs are, at least.
So is she the only one that you would say is yours? I mean, obviously they're all yours, but is she the only one that's...
Jamie and I have 10 between us.
Oh!
But she...
She's the leader. Well, seniority.
I mean, Jamie always says you can't have favorites. I'm like, yes, you can.
I don't know.
You can.
You're pretty cute.
She's the one that's always beside me.
Yes.
Not to discount the others in the group. But
So 10 of them are yours.
10 of them are ours, yes.
And then there's all the whole other pack.
Yes.
I don't know. That's part of me thinks that's crazy, and then the other part of me is like, no, I mean, I guess that makes...
I mean, if you think about it, we, you know, we live and work at an entire facility dedicated to dogs. There's 4 acres there. There's, I don't know, half a dozen different fenced-in yards. Our pack, our dogs are our working pack. They all help me.
Yeah.
You know, with
that's what I kind of was thinking of, that those are the employees.
Correct. So, I mean, these are not 10 dogs that spend 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day sitting in a crate while I'm at work all day. You know, they're all part of the system. We're right there with them. They get to enjoy the yards on the property as much as the rescues.
Do you think that having them around the rescues, does that... I mean, I don't know how it could not, but that would help kind of assimilate the new ones, I would think, is that having these happy, calm, normal dog, quote unquote, normal dogs around, and then you bring in these other ones and it kind of, yeah, I would think it would, it would calm them right down.
It's the idea. So if you've got a stressed out rescue, rather than putting them in the yard with another potentially stressed out rescue, no, I'm putting them in the yard with... You know, our dogs that are accustomed to the whole thing, they're obviously pretty chill and calm. But our dogs also have a variety of temperaments. So it helps me see, you know, how does this guy react to a very chill female dog versus more of a dominant female? And then the same thing with the boys. You know, I have the very laid-back boys, and I have the boys that are a little more intense about things. And you get a full picture.
Yeah.
At least when it comes to... me being able to tell you, the adopter, what you're looking at behaviorally.
And do you think, are there any more certain breeds that you find have to be, are rescued more, or is it really across the board?
I mean, the dogs that land in rescue most are your bully breeds.
Yeah, I kind of, I feel like I've heard that.
You know, they, I'm not entirely sure why is it, you know, there's insurance issues with having them. There's landlord issues sometimes with having them.
Just a general stigma.
A general stigma against having them, even though I do not find them to be the behavior problems of the dog world. But
I mean, Rella here is just...
Right. I mean, one of the reasons
she's just a beanbag. I'm looking at her. She looks like one of those door stops there, or giraffe stop. She's just this long little tube right now.
I mean, I bring her with me a lot because she is specifically, you know, with her breed being what she is, she ends up being a good ambassador for that breed.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
I don't like pitties or pit bulls, and I bring her out. And really, how can you not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything, but meeting her right now, I would think that it would be a nature versus nurture kind of situation that, you know, all dogs have individual personalities, right. Of course. But yeah, she's the sweetest little thing. Not very little, but.
I mean, one of my other dogs is a Great Dane, so it's all relative.
Yeah, that's true. But. Oh my gosh, a Great Dane. That's awesome.
So, yeah, she's, I mean, she's the best there is.
That sounds like favoritism to me.
And she made it pretty clear she wasn't going to leave.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's like, oh, no.
If Jamie were here, she'd be like, Rella came up and said, you're my dad. And that was that. So,
how old is she?
Best guess these days, probably 7 to 8.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. How do you age a dog you don't know?
There's a whole lot of overall body condition, teeth, you know, wear and tear on teeth, amount of tartar on the teeth. But again, that's a very inexact science because, you know, some dogs get tied to trees and chew rocks all their lives and their teeth are worn down to nubs by 2 years old.
Oh my gosh.
You know, other dogs have owners that sit there and brush their teeth every night. So, you know, there's two extremes.
Yep.
but a dog's natural life without, you know, just eating their meals every day and whatnot is usually what the vet uses as a baseline for aging them. But, you know, it's best guess.
Yeah. So. Oh, well, we have, we're about to wrap up. We got 1 minute left. So I just wanted to remind people, if you would like more information, You can go to Ulster County Canines. Again, that's Ulster, U-L-S-T-E-R, UlsterCountyCanines.com. Adam, thank you so much for coming and enlightening us. I feel like I learned so much. I had no idea, especially about the dog catcher situation. Thank you so much for coming and for bringing Rella.
We were happy to be here. Rella's just been enjoying the view out the window.
Yeah, there's a lot to see. Check out the website. Thank you. Thank you so much, Adam. And I'll see all of you, my listeners, next month.